This is episode number 20 with Kimra Luna. Welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Kwong, and each week I'll bring you an inspiring guest with an empowering message to help you rise higher and live your best life. Each guest shares their time of struggle and setback and what specific mindsets, tools, practices, or habits they use to overcome so that you can apply them to your life. This show is to remind you that you're not alone and that there's always a pathway up. Thanks for spending some time with me today. I'm grateful to be on this journey with you. Our struggles are a call for us to rise. So here we go. Let's dive deep now so we can rise higher together. And we're back with another episode of the Rise Higher podcast. And today, you guys, I cannot wait for you to connect with my guest, Kimra Luna. Now, Kimra has one of the most amazing transformation stories that I've heard. She's a personal branding and online business strategist. And Kimra helps freedom-seeking entrepreneurs to stand out, captivate their audience's attention, and monetize their authentic brands online. She's the founder of Freedom Hackers and Be True Brand You. And online entrepreneurs widely regard her Facebook group, the Freedom Hackers Mastermind, as one of the most supportive places on the internet. So when Kimra started her business back in May of 2014, she went from welfare to creating a seven-figure business in just over a year while she was raising two kids and pregnant with her third. So here's the thing. That's actually the surface-level story that most people are impressed by when they hear about Kimra's story going from welfare to, actually, she's at multiple seven figures now. But what most people don't know and what we drop deeply in about today is how painful and chaotic Kimra's past was. So today, Kimra actually shares so vulnerably with us about her excruciating childhood trauma and what it was like for her growing up in an intensely abusive household. You know, I was actually with Kimra a couple months ago, and when she started sharing about the abuse she experienced growing up, I was absolutely floored and horrified. And I was actually also deeply inspired by how she was able to rise up from her past. I was like, this, Kimra, this is what people need to hear because it's an incredibly empowering story. And so, you know, Kimra has a mega following, and not many of her people actually know the depth of how much she had to pull herself up to create the success that she has now. So in this episode, Kimra shares about her past, and she also goes in depth on how she was able to turn all that pain around, to rise up, and to not have her traumatic past define her future. And Kimra also talks about the inner work that she did to heal and to have the confidence to create what she has now with her life and her business. So some of the things we cover in today's episode are how to develop compassion for yourself and your experiences, a practice to let go of negative and limiting beliefs, the power of forgiveness to set yourself free of the past, how to shift out of self-doubt, the importance to create your system of support in friends and coaches, why it's okay to not have a relationship with someone who's done horrible things to you, even if they are family, the first step you must take to be able to radically change your life, and Kimra shares her best advice to break free of the past and into mega success. Plus, as always, so much more. So I hope you enjoy this episode, and for everything that we mentioned in today's episode and for links to connect with Kimra, you can check it out in the show notes, and that's over at stephaniekwong.com/EP20. All right. Are you ready? Because here we go. Okay. Kimra Luna, the legend, the badass.
I don't think I'd say legend, but working my way up there.
Yeah, you are. I'm so grateful to be here in your home in New Jersey. Woo woo! Yes. Or Jersey City.
Well, Jersey City is Yeah, it's a nice little area.
I love it. It's
right on the water.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. I love it here.
It's so good. Super grateful to have you on the Rise Higher podcast to share your story. You've been somebody who I've been following for quite a while, even when you first started out and you were living in Riverside and doing, you know, your in-person meetups and just always creating community and connection and being in mm-hmm. service. And I just loved witnessing your rise. And a big part of it is, from what my perspective is, how much you just give. You care so much about providing value for people. And your story has been so inspiring for me, where you came from. And actually, I'd just love, instead of me trying to recreate it, I would love for you to share your story from where you came from to where you are now.
Yeah, and it's a pretty big story. you know, the most typical stuff people see online is kind of like, oh, you know, like she was on welfare with two kids and now she has this, you know, multiple seven-figure business, you know, and that's kind of like the, I guess, surface level mm-hmm. story. You know, a lot of people haven't heard kind of like the deeper depths of my story, you know, and of course, you know, being on welfare and things was an extreme struggle for me. I was raised on welfare as a kid and I had always said, you know, well, when I'm an adult, I never want to be on welfare, you know, and then there I was, first kid and second kid, you know, in the hospital looking at my son being like, wow, I have no money to even buy you clothes. So, you know, I really felt quite miserable being on welfare, and I was reading all sorts of personal development books. I was reading business books. I mean, definitely not stereotypical of what people do just in general, but I don't think there's many people who would be in when they're in such a bad financial situation to be reading personal development. And I was doing that pretty extensively. And I wanted to, you know, really, really create a better life for myself. And I did have an immense amount of healing I had to do, though. You know, it's not like I didn't come from wealth. My mother was a single mom with five kids, four different dads. You know, I came from like a very kind of chaotic sort of background and childhood upbringing. And, you know, I really had to heal through a lot of things, and personal development was something that I used during that time. And I'm actually extremely grateful that I was, you know, not working and on welfare during those 4 years that I was, because that was an important time that I needed to be able to heal and learn to love myself, learn to build my confidence and my skills. And you know, it was just so crucial for me to have that 4 years of not working. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was dabbling and trying businesses and all these things during that time, but I'm very happy that I, you know, didn't have some super big business that was keeping me busy, because I feel like I wouldn't have had all that time to heal.
Yeah. And I know that you've shared with me before, a big part of your success is because of the level of depth that you've gone within yourself to face off with your past, with the traumas and things like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we were in, you know, together a few weeks ago in San Antonio, I got to learn more about your story, which inspired me way more. Like you said, everyone knows the welfare part, but they don't know where you really came from and the history with your family and what the type of lifestyle you lived as a child, which was, mm-hmm. to me, I was like almost in tears when I heard what you went through, because no child should ever have gone through that. But I'd love for you, if you're open to sharing, like, what was it like when you were growing up?
Yeah, I mean, it was basically being born into abuse. I actually even have specific memories when I was, you know, 2 years old, that being locked in a room all day, just screaming and crying in a dirty diaper. I remember, you know, hearing my other siblings being abused when I was really little. And then as I got older, I ended up being abused. But of course, I didn't realize when I was really little, like, really what that was. And then it became a point where I did learn what it was. And I was in kindergarten when I learned this. And what happened was, is I was getting ready for school and I wanted to go. I just really wanted to go to school. I loved school. Well, school was kind of an escape for me, you know, compared to my household lifestyle. And so I loved going to school. Kindergarten was my favorite class. And the teacher's name was Mrs. Bowes. I literally remember, like, on the wall, she had all these bows hanging up and everybody's names. And
like literal bows.
Yeah, okay. Literal bows. And her name was Mrs. Bowes, you know. So I think it was the way she got the kids to remember her name, right? And, you know, I remember going to kindergarten and really just loving it and enjoying it. And I woke up one day and I was getting ready to go to school and I brushed my hair and my teeth and I got dressed. I had my backpack on and I was ready to go out the door and my mom was still sleeping. And, you know, I kept bugging her to get up to walk me to school. And the school was only like 4 or 5 blocks from the house. And I kept bothering her and was just like, please take me to school. I want to go to school. And she got so angry with me, she slapped me. And then just rolled back over and went back to sleep. And, of course, I start screaming. I was like, fine, whatever. Like, I'm going to leave. And I just grabbed my backpack and I went out the door. And here I am, like this tiny, I mean, if people know me in person, I'm like tiny in general.
Tiny.
I'm like so 95 pounds of me, you know, I'm a tiny human. And I was so, so small back then. And I remember specifically like leaving the house and I went to the neighbor's house and I remember they had steps. And so I had to like walk up these steps, and to me the steps are huge, you know, and so I'm like climbing up these steps and I'm crying still, and I knock on the door and I talk to this woman, and because her son went to the same class as me, so I was like, oh, I'll walk to school with them, you know, that was my logic, right? And I knock on the door and the woman opens the door kind of surprised to see me and is like, oh, hi, and you know, and I was like, well, can I go to school with you guys today, you know? And she was like, yeah, sure. Like, you know, come in. We're going to leave in just a minute. He's just putting his shoes on. And I was like, okay. And I came in. And when I came in, like, I guess, like, kind of like the light, like, shined on my face. And she saw my face was red from being slapped by my mom. And she, you know, said to me, oh, my gosh, you know, sweetie, what happened? And I said, oh, don't worry, don't worry. It's okay. You know, my mom hit me, but, you know, I want to go to school. Like, don't make me miss school, you know? And she said, no, that's not okay. That's child abuse.
Wow.
And it was the first time I heard those words. And I was a very smart kid. I was already reading by that time. I was definitely, you know, the smart kid in class because I could read everything like already. The teacher would be like trying to spell it out. I was just like shouting out the word.
Let me just tell you what it says. Don't spell it. I'll just read it.
Yeah. Like I was reading at a very young age. I learned from Sesame Street. That's one of the benefits, I guess, of having a parent who neglects you. You just learn from television. So I learned how to read real young. Elmo really helped me out. And anyways, I remember specifically like hearing those words, child abuse, and it just kept kind of ringing in my head for months. And then I ended up going to the public library. My mom took me and my siblings to the library, and I went to look for books about child abuse.
Wow.
And when I asked the librarian, I said, you know, I literally went up and said, are there books about child abuse? And she's like, yeah, yeah, but there isn't any for kids. And I was like, oh, okay. And I just like kind of like was like, you know, like laughed because I didn't really know like what the real words meant. And but I knew that it was something that wasn't right. I knew that it was like something was happening to me that was different than the other kids. And, you know, I discovered, you know, like, okay, like maybe other kids aren't being hit. Maybe that's what abuse means. And I remember asking other kids, are you abused? And
what did these other kids
and
say?
These other kids were like, just looked at me like weird because they didn't even really know what it meant,
yeah.
You know? And so I remember spending months kind of trying to figure out what it meant. And then I actually asked my brother what it meant. And my brother said, oh, like it's, you know, someone's like hurting other people. And my older brothers, you know, one's 6 years older than me, the other one's 8 years older than me. So they obviously knew by that point. They were, you know, almost teenagers at that point. And they told me what it meant. And I was just like, so we get child abuse? Like we get, like that's what happens to us? And they're like, basically, you know? And I was just like, oh, okay. So at that point, I was like, oh my gosh, like, I am child abused, you know, like, wow. And there I am in kindergarten, just kind of like, okay. And I didn't know what to do with it. Like, I was just like, you know, like, is abuse an okay thing? Like, is it a bad thing? Like, I really just still didn't get a clear answer, but I just knew that it was something that's happening to me that I felt wasn't okay.
Mm-hmm. And this went on for a long time.
Yes. My mother actually didn't stop physically abusing me until I became like as big as her, basically. So once I became a teenager, then she did finally stop physically abusing me, but she then continued on, you know, mentally abusing me and emotionally abusing me for many years. I mean, and I would say actually the mental and emotional abuse was probably way so more bad. Traumatic than mm-hmm. even the physical abuse. But I mean, I do have physical abuse where, you know, one time she actually threw me down the stairs and I ended up getting an injury and she didn't take me to the doctor for it. And it ended up being where I had tore some ligaments. And I ended up several years after that having to get surgery. But she never, you know, told them like what happened. You know, like when we were at the doctor's office, she was just like, oh, I don't know. She must have fell or something or whatever, you know. And when really it wasn't that I fell, it was that she actually like threw me down the stairs. So it was just so many terrific things. And not only happening to me, I would actually start feeling guilty because she would be assaulting my siblings, you know. She would be harming them. And I would feel guilty for not being able to protect them, especially my younger siblings. And, you know, I just remember her fighting with my older brothers and like hitting them with, you know, utensils from the kitchen. And like, I remember one time she threw hot grease at one of my brothers. I mean, just really, really horrendous things that she would do. And, you know, I feel like now she has actually gotten a lot better, but she never was, you know, very, for, you know, saying like, oh, you know, I'm sorry for what I've done or has asked for forgiveness. And I haven't spoke to her in 3 years now, almost 4 years now, I think, because it just, there was no mending the relationship. And I think that, you know, if anybody's listening to this, like, it's okay to not have a relationship with somebody that has done horrible things to you. And even if they did something horrible once, you know, you don't need to be around people that are going to be treating you that way.
Yeah. I mean, I think I love that you said that because there's so much of a struggle sometimes I hear with people where they guilt themselves into keeping people in their lives mm-hmm. because it's a family member, it's blood, or I've known them for so long. So they kind of talk themselves into keeping mm-hmm. toxicity in their life
yeah.
when it really doesn't support them at all. And that, yeah, that permission slip, it's okay to let people out of your life because if they are harming you versus, you know, healing you or supporting you, they don't have space to be there.
Yeah, and there was a lot of, you know, interesting things that happened, like, as my business grew. And, you know, I have 3 kids and my birth mom, I call her my birth mom because I don't really feel like she's a mom to me. I feel like there's other people in my life that are more mom-like. But, you know, my birth mom, she really, you know, didn't really try to be in my kids' lives. And then, like, once I started having success in business, she, like, was trying to, like, connect with me more. And she would start telling people, like, you know, bragging about me to people and all of these sorts of things when, you know, she didn't really support me at all in my journey. And I remember calling her and talking to her, and she was just like, well, I'm so proud of you and all the sorts of things. And I was like, you were never proud of me. Even for a second, my entire childhood, mm-hmm. my entire teenagers. In my teenagers, I barely even spoke with you. Mm-hmm. I was like, you didn't support me in anything. So therefore, you still don't support me now. Even if you say you do, you're only saying I do because I am a public figure and I'm out in the world. And you're only posting things for your own glorification, not for you actually being genuine support of me. And therefore, I'm no longer going to communicate with you mm-hmm. anymore. And it was such a good conversation. And you know, she had said, you know, like, well, this is so hurtful to me and things like that. And I said, well, you hurt me my whole life. So I guess it's okay I hurt you once.
Wow. Did she ever, I mean, understand the depth even of what she did? Because I know there are other things you shared as well with, you know, with the sexual trauma that happened mm-hmm. in your home when you were growing up that was caused by her.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of hard because it's like, I don't know if she's ever have felt remorse or felt really bad about everything. And I mean, maybe to a point she has, but you know, several of my other siblings can't even function in society. You know, my youngest brother, you know, does who the heck knows what, all sorts of drugs and things like that. You know, I haven't spoken with him in many, many years. My oldest brother, you know, he's in his 40s and he could barely even live out on his own because there was such, you know, weird relationship dynamics with him and my mom. And there's just so many weird things that were always happening. And there was definitely a lot of sexual trauma that was happening to me, typically from my quote unquote mom's friends, whoever these people were, because I've always had all these like nightmares of like being molested and things, and it's always multiple people. It's like there's not like one person I can pinpoint, which isn't really typical of people that have, you know, been molested or have been mm-hmm. sexually assaulted. Usually it's like, oh, there's like one family member or one person that's doing it to them. But for me, it was many, many different men that I have no clue who they are. And most of them were also molesting my sister as well. And, you know, we've spent a lot of years healing from that trauma. You know, my sister has been in therapy for several years now as well, because, you know, as a kid, we couldn't go to therapy, even though I was extremely depressed, even though I was suicidal as a teenager, even though all these things were going on. My mom basically wouldn't even allow us to go to therapy because she knew that we would tell them all the things that she had been doing to us. And another thing that I discovered was also really messed up, that about 2 years ago, I was just like, you know what? Every freaking teacher I ever had in elementary school, every adult I ever came in contact with, none of them did shit for me. And they knew what was happening. They knew. They knew all the bruises. They knew me being like this little scrawny thing was because I was like malnourished. I wasn't even eating most of the time. And when I was so stressed, I couldn't even eat, you know? So it wasn't even if sometimes there was food in the house, but then other times there wasn't any food at all. So it was just like, I was this scrawny little malnourished thing, beaten and abused all the time, depressed every single day. In my second grade class, the teacher had us write a journal, you know, because that's like when kids are kind of first starting to learn to like put a sentence together, you know? Mm-hmm. And we had to write every single day, like, oh, how are you feeling that day? Like, what's something you're excited about or whatever? And every single day in that journal, I wrote, I'm hungry. I'm tired. I couldn't sleep last night because my parents were fighting. I couldn't sleep last night because my mom was hurting me. Like, I literally had the written in journals.
And nobody did anything.
And people didn't do anything. And it's... To me, it took me a long time to be able to forgive those people. I was like, gosh, I have to forgive all of these teachers, all of these people at my church, all these people that just from my city, my town, they knew what was happening, yet they did nothing to help me. And I know that that's still happening to this day. There are still children who are abused on a daily basis that nobody is speaking up and helping those children.
What do you think is... why they're not? Like, this is, it's so crazy to me.
They just don't want to get in people's business. They don't want to cause a problem, or they don't want to accuse something when maybe it wasn't really happening, or, you know, like, there's so many reasons, but I feel like it's like, we just are in a society where it's just like, it's happened to so many people, they just think it's normal. Even when they're an adult, they haven't healed from it themselves. They're just like, oh, that's just normal for kids to get smacked once in a while. Yeah. When really it isn't normal.
It's not at all.
In other countries, it's illegal, completely illegal. If you hit your kid once, you go to prison, you know? Like, in other places that are more peaceful, that have low crime rates and all this sort of stuff, they don't allow that type of behavior towards their kids at all.
At all? No.
Like, your child is gone out of your custody immediately and not given back.
I feel like now, because when growing up, you know, in the 80s as well, it was for me, kind of hitting your kids was a bit more acceptable. Now I feel like it's
in public.
Now it's changing a bit more. And I think even kids, you know, they'll pick up the phone and call and report their own parents and they'll actually take some action. But it's so horrifying, just kind of that generation of, and it's all they knew, right, yeah, at that time. So, but realizing the impact that it has on
society. I mean, what's the percentage of adults that are depressed, have anxiety, have all of these mental ills
and relationship issues,
relationship problems, really, really bad relationship problems, not knowing how to connect, not knowing how to love, not knowing how to receive pleasure, not knowing how to, you know,
attach or detach.
Yeah, attach or detach when, you know, things need to happen. I mean, it's really insane. It really mm-hmm. is. And I know that most of that stems from our childhoods. Yeah. And as a mother of three kids, I've had to be very mindful of what the kids see and hear. And of course, I'm not perfect. No parents are perfect. But it had to be very conscious decisions. When I became pregnant with my first son, I was terrified of having a baby. The first thing I did is I called my stepdad to give me money to have an abortion, because I was just like, I cannot have a baby. Like, that is just no. I can't be a mother. There's no way I could raise my kid right. Like, I don't want to do this. And, you know, I talked to my husband, who is my boyfriend at the time, you know, and he's like, well, we've been together for years. Like, we'll be okay. He's like, I was raised good, you know, and I was just like, well, yeah, you know, your parents are really great, you know. He's like, we can do this. We'll figure it out, you know. You're probably not going to be as bad as you think you're going to be, you know.
Well, and yeah, so, you won't be, well, because at least you cared. You even thought to think, like, I can't do this. Yeah. And I don't want to treat my child in a terrible way. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't want to be bad. I didn't want to be abusive. I didn't want to be harmful to anybody. And that's, you know, really, like, that pregnancy, like, really triggered so much personal growth. I read so many parenting books. 90% of them are definitely about manipulating and coercion of your children. So there's a lot I did not agree with whatsoever, that just did not feel peaceful. And I had a few friends that were like, yeah, you can, like, raise your kids, like, without hitting them and without screaming at them and without punishing them nonstop. Like, you mm-hmm. can do that. And they led me to other types of books. Like, there's one book called Unconditional Parenting, another one called Raising Our Children, Raising Ourselves. There was a lot of different things I started reading and understanding these different types of concepts where you can just communicate with your kids and have mutual respect and treat them as if they are adults and talk to them that way, where they understand things clearly. You know, it's not very difficult for my kids if they do something that I'm just like, hey, like, that is not okay behavior. We don't do that. That's mm-hmm. not how we behave in this household. Oftentimes, that's all I have to say for them to stop doing what they were doing, mm-hmm. for them to be like, that's true. We don't do that in this yeah. household.
Well, and because you've modeled that, though, Kimra, yeah. like, you've done so much inner work to ensure that you're not displaying that behavior, so they know yeah. that that's not what they do. Because I think it's all, you know, the whole do as I say, not as I do parenting. And then they're like, wait, don't yell, but you're yelling at me. Yeah. How does this work? But yeah. that you're actually taking the steps to show your kids how to operate from a peaceful place. Mm-hmm. Yeah, is really key. How did you, because I know this is so important for people to hear, because you went through so much deep abuse, and I know you'd shared with me, you know, the anger that you had and that confusion and that, like, everything that was happening internally for you, but that you started taking the path of growth. What were the steps that you took? Because for some people who are really struggling with their past, because, you know, maybe they came from really abusive homes, but they're so trapped by the pain of it. Mm-hmm. How can they rise higher and overcome that so that they can go on to do something like what you've done, when you've created so much success, you know, multiple seven-figure business all on your own, pretty much. I know you said your first seven-figure, you just hit it on by pretty much working on your own. You didn't yeah. have a staff.
Yeah.
But that takes something. It took that the 4 years of the working on yourself, as you shared, right? But what were the steps that you took specifically?
Yeah, a lot of it was books. A lot of it was listening to audios. I would listen to personal development audios pretty much all day. Mm-hmm. I would just sit in my room and just listen to stuff, because for one thing, I wanted to have good birthing experiences. So I had to make sure that I was kind of, you know, getting my mind ready for that in itself. But I knew I had a lot of forgiveness. I had to forgive my mother specifically of all sorts of things. But I also had to forgive myself for allowing things to happen to me and not standing up for myself when I should have been standing up for myself. And, you know, and forgiving myself, I think, was a million times harder than forgiving other people. And it's still something, of course, you always have to work on, because there's always somebody that might do something against you in some way. You do that, you know, that's going to happen your whole life. But luckily now it's not as big of things, I guess, than what has happened, you know, when I was a child. But there was mostly forgiveness work, I'd say, is the main thing. I spent a lot of time journaling. I wasn't able to afford a therapist. You know, I was on welfare, and the only types of therapists they send you to are actually psychiatrists who just want to give you drugs.
Meds, yeah.
And I didn't want to use drugs. I wanted to actually heal. And so, you know, going to, you know, there wasn't any really therapist, wasn't really an option. So I spent an immense amount of time reading and just educating myself and learning, like, you know, how to heal from trauma. And I remember when I first learned what self-love was, I was like, what is that?
Yeah, let's talk about that. That's one of my favorite things to talk about. Let's talk about, like, self-love.
What is self-love? Yeah, that was really interesting. But yeah, I remember first learning about that. And it was like, to me, my understanding is where you have such a deep forgiveness of yourself that even if you do go out in the world and you maybe make a mistake, or maybe you do yell at your kid, or maybe you do, you know, call somebody a name, or whatever these random miscellaneous, not so nice things we do as humans, you have compassion for yourself. Mm-hmm. And you allow yourself time to heal and grow, because every experience does affect us, you know, and everything sticks with us. And mm-hmm. so we have to choose, are we going to allow that thing to stick with us in a negative way or a positive way? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do we continue to give it power?
Yeah.
Or do we take our power back?
Yeah, exactly. And of course, you know, I, you know, have definitely made mistakes. I mean, I'm going through a divorce right now. And so it's like, obviously, you know, it takes two to tango, you know, both of us were not, you know, behaving as well as we could have been. And, you know, so, you know, now it's like, how do I forgive myself for those things? And that is finding love for myself and just seeing myself as, like, I know that I am a being who doesn't want to harm people. I know I'm a being who wants to, you know, provide peace and love and safety for everybody around me. I, you know, and just really letting, like, I have to remind myself of those things sometimes, mm-hmm. you know? And I think, to me, that's what I do a lot when I'm working on self-love. I also journal a lot when it comes to self-love, and just saying positive things about myself that I know are true. I don't try to stretch the truth, because I feel like if I don't believe it, then I'm not really going to feel it. But I will say things that I know are true about me, that mm-hmm. maybe there was a nice thing I did for somebody, even if it was just like, oh, I let that person cut in line at Starbucks. Like, wow, I was a nice person that day. Mm-hmm. Congratulations yep. to me. You know,
and self-validation is so huge.
Yeah, I needed that, because I spent my whole childhood being called stupid and all these other horrible names. And, you know, like, it was just, yeah, it was kind of like I had to, like, undo all of those, like, negative affirmations that were thrown at me as a kid about myself, you know, because I mean, even teachers at school were vicious towards me. Mm. So, and then there was kids that were bullying me, and then it was my own family members.
How did you manage that as a kid? Like, when all that was happening to you, how did you?
I didn't manage it. I was the kid that was crying all the time, angry all the time, frustrated, angry outbursts multiple times a week at school. Like, I wasn't handling it. I wasn't able to. And it wasn't until I became a teenager and my youth pastor at church recommended the book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective Teenagers. Because the author is, like, Mormon, and I'm from Idaho, and it's like everybody's reading the book, right? So, because everybody in Idaho is, like, Mormon. Well, not everybody, but a big portion of people are. And so I remember I read that book, and it you know, basically mapped out, like, what are your priorities? And there I am, you know, like this like 15, 16 year old teenager looking at, you know, reading this book, and they even had like a class at it at my church and everything, like, oh, we're going to like study it like really in depth and things. And my whole thing was just like, well, I really want to help people. That's like my number one priority. And then my second is don't be anything like my family. That I was just like, I'm going to do, like, I remember writing in that book, like, do the opposite of everything your family has done and you're going to turn out okay.
Wow.
And so I was already kind of on a path of personal development at that point. I didn't realize that that was personal development, but that's kind of like the first, technically the first personal development book I ever read, mm-hmm. was, you know, that. And I actually recently rebought the book because I was just like, oh, what did this book
say? But not
say?
For teens though, not, right?
I bought the teen
oh,
one
you did?
Because I wanted to see what it said, you know?
Nice.
And so I was looking at it and I was just like, yeah, I can remember these, mm-hmm. like the things that I was answering to these things and what was important to me as a teenager. And it was so crucial that I help people. And mm-hmm. I remember in my my theater class, we had this teacher's name was Mr. like Shoemaker or Shawmaker. It was like this weird long, it was spelt really weird, this guy's name, right? And he had us do an assignment where we had to do a 2-minute monologue. We had to write it ourselves and we had to perform it ourselves. And it could have been, you know, miming or anything, right? But it had to be about what we wanted to be when we grew up. So I did this motivational speech type of thing. Because I was just like, oh, I just want to like, you know, inspire people or something. Like I didn't really know what I wanted to be when I grew up. I still don't really know what I want to be when I grow up. But I want to do all the things.
All the things.
All the things.
Multi-passionate.
Multi-passionate. Hashtag multi-passionate. I want to do all the things. But as a teenager, I just wanted to help people. And that was something I guess was probably a big value that I learned at church. Mm-hmm. My family, like my mom and things didn't really go to church at the time, but my sister and I did go, just with like other friends and things like that. And I think that was a value I got from church was like, you always be a person that helps. Mm-hmm. Like that's kind of your role and your purpose here on the planet is to help people. And I was like, oh, okay. Like that's what I want to do. I'm just going to do that. Right. And I didn't know how I was going to help people. So anyways, I do this little 2-minute monologue that turned out to be this inspirational speech or whatever. And at the end of it, the teacher said, okay, well, guess what does Kimmer want to be when she grows up? And someone said, she wants to be Tony Robbins. And then and I didn't know who Tony Robbins was. And then I'm amazed
one of the other kids knew.
And Well, the kid said his mom listens to the CDs when she's driving him to school.
I would listen to them too on tape.
Yeah. So she's like, and then another person said she wants to be Oprah. And I was just like, oh, I know Oprah. That sounds pretty cool. You know, like I like that. You know, and the teacher said, well, what do you want to be? And I was like, I don't know. Like I just didn't ever know. And I remember going to my school counselor and they're trying to, you know, help us figure out our career paths and all this sort of stuff. And I was really into videography. I was in, you know, a video and broadcasting class through high school, which makes sense why I love, you know, being on podcasts and all those sorts of things. And so I was in this broadcasting class in high school. And the teacher, he actually used to work at Fox. And he was really great. Mr. Allen still was my all-time favorite teacher I ever had. And I was really into videos and I wanted to create documentaries. I wanted mm-hmm. to just like share people's stories and share inspirational stories. And so when the school counselor like asked me what I wanted to be, I said, well, I want to make documentaries when I grow up. And what he said to me, he said, well, documentarists don't make money. That's what he said to me. And I was just like, well, then like I don't know what I want to be.
That's not helpful.
You know,
yeah.
I was like, then I don't know what I want to be then. And he kind of tried to convince me. He's like, oh, well, if you like video stuff, like maybe you could go to film school or things like that. And I was just like, okay, like I guess I'll do that. Yeah. And I did end up going to film school.
Did you really?
Yeah, I went to film school in Seattle. I went to the Art Institute and studied film there for a little while, but then I couldn't afford it after a while. So, you know, it's expensive. Film school and art school is expensive. Yeah. Like I was just like, I can't afford this. I'm going to be like $100,000 in debt by the time I finish this.
And documentary filmmakers do not make money.
So I was just like, this isn't going to happen. I'm just going to do concerts.
You
I'm
know
like,
what?
That's it.
What I love though is you've pretty much morphed a lot of your passions into what you're doing now because you
do a lot of video.
Yeah. And that's been kind of an ace for you in really building your business. But I love that I actually just want to go back to one thing because I really want to say this because I think it's so key and important. When you were looking at the 7 Habits of Highly Effective Teenagers book, that you made decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you read that book and you wrote this stuff down, like this is so key for people to know, hey, if you want your life to shift, you actually have to get clear of what you want it to look like.
Yeah.
And in that moment as a teenager, you got so clear as to how you, what was going to bring you the most joy or how you wanted to be in the world, mm-hmm. which is I want to be in service. I want to help people. And then that I'm never going to be like my parents, but you had to get clear of what that even looked like for you. And that is that drawing the line in the sand or making the decision is what puts you on the path to where you're supposed to
and
go.
And I've always been a person, I mean, most people would say, you know, I'm very stubborn. I'm very like, and the thing is I am, but it's because I'm very clear on my values. I'm very clear on what I want. I'm very clear on my beliefs. And so, yes, that makes me stubborn in a lot of ways. There's certain things I don't budge on. Like, you know, I've had people that say like, oh, like, you know, you should charge more if people make a payment plan versus a regular plan. And I'm like, no, my value is that I don't punish people for not having money. I was raised poor. I don't punish people for not having money. To me, that is not fair.
Yep.
Just because one person can get could put $5,000 on a credit card and another person has to do a payment plan. Like, why would I punish the person that has to make a payment plan? They're still committing the same amount of time and effort.
Mm-hmm. That's
huge, you know, and it's my own belief system. So yes, I'm stubborn on that. I've had every single business coach I've ever talked to tell me I should charge more for people that do payments. And I said, no, I'm not going to punish people in that way. So there are definitely things I am stubborn on, and maybe those aren't the smartest business decisions or things ever to be stubborn on certain things, but I will not change my values and my beliefs and go against those things, even whether it's in business or personal life or any sort of thing. Yeah. And my company's name is Freedom Hackers because I want to help people have freedom. Mm-hmm. And I'm always going to do whatever goes along with my brand that's going to help people create freedom in some way, always.
Well, and first key, and just going back to because I love this and I want to deep dive a little bit more, is like first freedom in yourself.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yes, freedom by having a successful business and making a lot of money so you have more options and choices. That there's that freedom. But when you talked about the self-forgiveness, I don't want to gloss over that because I think it's so important. When you allow or create freedom within yourself, it invites in that level of self-forgiveness that you're talking about. How does somebody forgive themselves? Like, what's a process that you went through?
Yeah. For me, I think it was, I mean, immense amounts of journaling. I am like a journal junkie, piles of journals.
Oh, you showed
everywhere.
Me your pile of journals.
Yeah. Yeah. I have piles. I'm like this one and this one and this one. Like I'm a journal junkie. And I have one journal that's specifically for when I am having those negative self thoughts. And it's kind of like my angry journal. And that's what I call it. And it's my journal that I use when I know there's these negative things that are coming into my head and I just start scribbling them down. And it gets pretty shredded because I'm like writing really hard because I'm like angry. And it's kind of my way to just channel those things out of me. And then what I will do is I'll read through all of those things and I'll ask, is that really true to every single sentence I write? And every single time, none of it is true. And it just reminds me again of like, oh, I love myself. These things aren't true about me. You know, these beliefs I'm having aren't true. And when I started doing that, and it's kind of funny because I actually did that even when I was in high school, but I didn't realize what I was doing. I remember I was like angry, viciously writing down in journals. And I guess maybe that was my own form of therapy because my mom wouldn't let me go to therapy because we would tell them what happened to us.
And that's kind of what therapy is anyway. It's just about dumping your stuff. So you're already doing it, but you're saving yourself a lot of money.
Yeah. So anyways, so I would just, and I feel like that's something almost like you got to get those things out of you sometimes. Like, and I think that's a big problem in our society is we don't have safe places to put those things, but a journal is a safe place. The journal is not going to judge you. The journal is not going to try to give you advice. The journal is not going to try to change you in any way as a person. And, you know, that's to me really important because I don't want somebody trying to just change who I am. my beingness is already my beingness. Like, I, yes, there's things that can shift and choose to change, but I don't want somebody else trying to change me. Whether that's in, even in my relationships, I tell any guy I date immediately, you cannot change me, and I don't have any intention on changing you. Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can mesh this together and it could work together. You being you and me being me. Mm-hmm. And
gosh,
I think,
what if humanity just did that?
Yeah.
I'll allow you to be you. I'm not going to try to change you or judge you or force you or push you.
You know,
just like,
and, you know, yeah, let it's you like, be. To me, it's like, oh, you know, if that's your career path and you choose that, that's wonderful. You know, what are the commitments going to be to me? Is that going to work for me? If it's not going to work for me, then maybe this relationship has to end and it's not going to work. You know, I don't want to change your desires, your loves, the things you're passionate about. And, you know, I think, you know, even that is, to me, is me forgiving myself. It's allowing things to just happen and not come from a judgment place. Mm-hmm. Like, and I've had some people say like, oh, well, Kimran, like you're so, you know, just like, go with the flow and all these sorts of things. And I think you can become go with the flow. Like, even if you are stubborn like me and stick to my beliefs and things like that, you can still have that go with the flow vibe when you do have that forgiveness of yourself. It makes it easier. And like I said, for me, it was just all that angry journaling. And I still do the angry journaling.
It's so important.
Any of the negative self-talk, I get it out. And I literally just look at every single thing, and it's never really true.
Mm-hmm.
It's never really the truth of who I am.
No. And so much of that, those negative self-talk is either someone handed it to us or we distorted an interpretation of an experience that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then we hold on to it like it's the truth when it's not. And I mean, I'm sure that how you built what you've built with your business, you couldn't have done that if you allowed the negative self-talk from your childhood to run you.
Yeah, I couldn't have. And luckily, most of that has faded away, I feel. Maybe not all of it, but I feel majority of it has left my beingness, my aura, or whatever you want to call it. I feel a lot of that has left. And it's, to me, it's just so important that people realize, like, those things can go, you know. Sometimes we think like, you know, that stuff is going to be harming us forever, but really it can go. And I know I wouldn't have been able to build a 7-figure business if I kept allowing all of those horribly toxic things that people were saying to me and putting in my brain I wouldn't be able to have any success mm-hmm. at all. Like, let alone any happiness, alone any joy, let alone raising my children in a peaceful home.
Yeah. What are some other things that were extremely helpful for you too? So self-forgiveness, huge, and even forgiveness of others, because of course, when we continue to hold resentment, we're just harming mm-hmm. ourselves. But what are other things that really supported you in freeing yourself mm-hmm. from your past so that you can move powerfully forward into your future?
I think for me, it was mainly that I just had such a deep passion for what I do. You know, I spoke with, and I wanted to write an email about this to send it to my list, but I had spoke with my ex-husband a few weeks ago, and I was just like, I was kind of feeling a little frustrated because I was like, you know, I am, you know, like I have all these businesses I want to do, and I have all these different skills, and I'm kind of like this, you know, Jane of all trades type of person. And he said to me, he said, and I had said, you know, I don't feel I've like mastered something. Like, I really just want to master something and be like the most professional person like at that thing. And he's like, well, Kimra, you mastered something that other people never master.
Yes,
and he says, passion.
He's like,
passion is the thing you mastered. He's like, you have mastered that to like the 1,000th times more of anybody else. Like, you have mastered that. And so he's like, just remember you've mastered it. And I was like, hilarious. It's my ex-husband, of course, that tells me this thing.
Well, he knows you really well.
He knows me more than anybody else, right? And so, you know, so I thought that's hilarious. But yeah, I definitely want to write like an email about that, because I think we all, sometimes we doubt ourselves. We might think like, oh, like, well, maybe I'm not so skilled at this, but really we are. We're just doubting ourselves. And sometimes we do need, I guess, maybe validation. And even if it has to be my ex-husband that validates, yeah, I guess I'll, you know, I'll take it, you know, mm-hmm. Because some people that is really important to get validation. But, you know, I think for me, it was like when, especially forgiveness of others, I actually did whatever it took to actually write positive things about the people who harmed me.
Ooh. Let's talk about that.
Okay, so my mother, for instance. My mother, she was a very highly sexual person. She had 5 kids with 4 different dads. And I actually saw my mom using sexuality in positive ways to help us survive. You know, she would be flirting with the mechanics to get a deal. You know, she would, you know, like legitimately like flaunting her boobs at them. Like, you know, like things like that. And to me, that was a positive thing because I wasn't, I didn't feel like that's like a negative thing. I've never had negative beliefs against people. I've never been like, oh, that person's slutty or whatever. Like, I've never had those sorts of beliefs against people, which I feel has been good for my relationships because some of my friends, yeah, they did sleep around with all sorts of people and I never judged them. So I think because I saw that thing, it helped me not judge people that were more promiscuous and like to sleep around a lot, which I feel has been positive just in my relationships overall, because most people are way more promiscuous than I am. I'm like a prude most of the time. So, which is like hilarious, but I'm definitely on the prude end when it comes to most of my friends. And so that was one thing I learned from her. You know, another thing was that, that she's an extremely talented artist, very, very talented. She would draw these just beautiful photos of like fairies and all these mythical creatures that just came out of her head. Like she wasn't even looking at other things. She would just, it would just flow from her. Mm-hmm. She just has very vivid imagination. And so that was something. Another thing was that my mother, she was also extremely traumatized as a child. Like probably 20 times the extreme of what I endured. And that enabled me to have compassion for her and to have empathy for her and understand like she was doing the best that she could with the tools and resources that she had available and with the amount of healing or lack of healing that she, you know, was able to have at that time. Mm-hmm. So that was another big thing that really helped me be able to be like, okay, this is how I can forgive her. It doesn't mean I necessarily need her in my life, but I'm able to say like, I know there are some positive things about her. Hopefully she's doing some positive things in the world. And I just have to release that and let that go. And it's been so, I mean, it just, the second I stopped like speaking with her, it just lifted so much weight off my shoulders. Yeah. And that was when I felt I truly forgave her. It was actually me letting her go was like the like, kind of nail, you know, like the nail in the wall, like, you know, like I'm banging it and banging it and banging it forever and it never got in. And now it finally got, the nail finally went through into the wall, mm-hmm. was when I just let her go and say, you know what, she can go make her peace and do that in her own way. I will do that in my own way. Yep. It will be separate paths.
You're free of her.
Yeah. Yeah. And it took a long time. It took a long time. I mean, my ex, he really, like for like the first time after he met my mom, he was just like, are you sure we need to speak with her? You know, like he was like, no, like I just don't want this type of energy. And so I'm grateful that I lived far away from her, mm-hmm. and was able to kind of keep a physical distance from her, which I think can also be the first step for people. If someone is traumatizing you, go away.
Go away.
Don't be near them.
Yep.
Because the closer you are to them, the more they are able to do the things that they're doing to you.
And there's these patterns that just keep getting triggered when you're next to the trigger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the also really great things about your mom, mm-hmm. is that she gave birth to you.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And it's kind of crazy because the doctors actually wanted her to have abortions because the doctors knew what was going on in the home life. They knew that her first husband was extremely abusive to her. They knew kind of the mental state of her. And they actually recommended my mother to abort. My mother also had a cesarean section with her first. And, you know, this was back, you know, in like the 70s and stuff. So her incision was just like this huge, giant incision across her body. And, you know, they were like, no, like it's not safe for you to have more babies and things like that. So it is kind of miraculous that any of us even were born, you know, basically, especially after my oldest brother. But yeah, I'm definitely grateful that I am born and here, because I know I have, you know, a purpose and I have a mission that I am on, to serve people.
Yeah. And that is something that you do in a huge way. That's what I started out with on this, you know, episode, is that you are such a giver. You care so deeply. You have, my experience with you, you know, over the years, it's like you have no ego. You're just who you are, and you just care to make sure that people get what they need and that they really, really get the freedom that they desire and to have the tools to get there, you know, which is so rare, I think, in the industry that we're in, especially as what you do. It's more ego-driven, and for you, it's all heart-driven. With the business that you've created, what do you see as kind of the big healing that you had to do within to truly get to where you are? Because those people who desire deep success, right? But something's holding them back. They're hitting these walls. They can't get past it to get to the next level. What are some bits of advice that you would give them on how to break through?
For me, stop complaining, because there's a lot of people that have things 1,000 times worse than you have and 1,000 times worse than you'll ever have. The fact that you're even listening to a podcast means you probably live in a first world country. So you are okay. Like, just that's the first thing. Like, you really have to stop complaining. That was one of the first things that, like, when I was reading personal development books, I was like, oh, I have to stop complaining. I was a major complainer. I don't even know how I even had friends. Like, I just, like, even like my ex-husband, I've told him, I said, I don't know what you even saw in me to have stayed with me for 11 years. Like, I was like the worst complainer. I have no clue how you even were attracted to me in any way, right? So that was, it became like this like self-awareness thing. Like, anytime I was complaining about something, I was like, is that really that bad? You know, like, is that really causing some hardcore emotional distress towards me right now? No, I'm just maybe a little bit annoyed or whatever, but it's not really that bad.
Yeah. And when you're complaining, your focus is in the total wrong place.
Yeah.
You are in kind of the, like, you know, I hate using this word, but for lack of a better word, like the victim mentality versus, like, you know, being the champion of your life and putting your focus towards something productive
to move
you towards what you want.
And so that's definitely one of the things is stop complaining. The more you complain, the less success you're going to have, guaranteed. Mm-hmm. You know, we can do some betting on that. I'll monitor your guys' complaints and then we'll see how successful you are.
Yeah.
And then another thing for me was really just up-leveling the belief that I can help people. And the way that I did that was I just went out and got clients. And when I got clients, it gave me higher belief. And the more belief I had in myself, the easier the other business things were, the easier it was to get on videos, the easier it was to do webinars. And it's not that I'm still not scared to do webinars. Every time I do a webinar, I'm freaking terrified. You know,
really? You've done so many. You're still terrified? You're like the queen of
scared.
Video.
I'm still so scared. And I think that when people, like, you know, anybody, it doesn't matter if they're a master public speaker, they're a master on videos and things like that. Everybody has our things, you know? And I think another part would be forgive yourself for having those things. And if it's something that's a really, really big thing, definitely go get help with that. Hire a mindset coach, hire a therapist, hire somebody that can help you work through those things. I get a lot of students who have a lot of problems with being visible. They're really terrified to do a live stream and get out in front of people and that sort of stuff. They're really like, oh my gosh, my family's going to judge me. What are my friends going to be thinking about me? Oh, my makeup isn't right. I don't know how to do my makeup right. Like, you know, they find all of these things and reasons why to not do something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think for some people, it is extreme where they're like, they're literally so terrified to even have a picture of themselves online, you know? And so those are people that do maybe need a mindset coach, maybe need a therapist, maybe need somebody else to help them even deeper. It's okay to ask for help and support. You need to do that. You can't just build a business on your own. And I know people who are making hundreds of millions a year who have coaches to check their mindset.
Completely.
Where they're like,
game on with the mindset. Yeah. Game on or game off with the mindset.
Yeah. And I have a coach. Anytime I need them, boom, I just send them a freaking text. Be like, yo, like, this is what's happening. Like, talk me out of this. Like, you know, like, I don't know what's going on. And the past week on our call with my coach, He was, you know, just asking, like, is there any specific things that are, like, holding you back? And I was like, oh, well, I'm kind of having this mindset thing around sales, which sounds bizarre as someone who has made lots of money online. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of having this thing around sales, and I'm, you know, he was like, oh, well, make sure, you know, you're journaling and things like that, and figuring out what is really, like, the thing that is actually the reason why you think you're not good at sales. And the reason why is because after my divorce, my income did decrease. So I'm like in this mindset of just like, oh, great. Like, I don't have as much money as I had before. And I'm just like being as lame-o, like feeling sorry for myself.
Oh, were you complaining?
You know? Yeah. Yeah. Basically, yeah. I was just like in my head. I'm just you know, like, well, basically just feeling sorry for myself is what the problem was. I was feeling sorry for myself. You know, sorry for myself. Like, oh, I'm just a single mom. I was just like, being sorry for myself. I'm like, why the heck am I being sorry for myself? Like, you know, and then, you know, I just did a lot of things to like validate like why I am good at sales. No, I don't do sales the way the typical people do. But I'm not a typical person. Mm-hmm. I am unique. I like myself to be unique, which is a selling point, you know, for most people. Huge. They like that I'm different. They like that I'm not hardcore sales, you know? So I kind of had to talk myself, you know, out of that mentality. And then, of course, just looking at inside of my Entre Report where it says like 3 million in sales. And that doesn't even account all the affiliates and other things I've done over the years. So it's just like,
yeah, okay, you've got enough evidence to show that you're good at it.
You know, and so I think, I had to find the evidence. And sometimes we need a coach to be like, you're either complaining or you're just whining about something or something's going on in your head. Like, you need to unravel that. And so sometimes we need a coach or a therapist or someone that'll help us kind of get through those little kinks that we have. Because they always pop up. Our brains are these weird things. I don't know why they do this, but they just, boom, pops up. Boom, another thing pops up. You're like, what the heck? I thought I was through that. You know what I mean? Like, why are you coming back at me? You know, like, let's keep going. You know, I need some more healing work, I guess, around that, you know? Yeah.
And I think the gold is in when it pops up, having the tools to move through it faster and just to shift quicker.
Yeah, well, and the self-awareness. Mm-hmm. You know, once people start doing this thing, because, you know, I told you guys to do this, stop complaining. Once you guys get to that stop complaining mode and you start, you like, it's almost like a complaint starts popping in your head and you could like feel it, write it down and be like, wow, well, and really analyze, why were you feeling that way? You know, like, why was this happening? Why does that keep popping up? You know, and I think it's really funny because I see people, because I lived in California for a long time. There's a lot of road rage, right? And, and I'm just like, you're in the same traffic every single day. How could you not get content with it after living, like, doing this for 10 years in a row? Like, I don't understand why you're still having road rage and like you could see people screaming in their car.
I almost feel like,
you know what I mean?
You know when people have to be so subdued in their normal life, right? Like, I can't show anger. So it's almost like the moment they get in the car, they're like, this is where I unleash. This is where I get pissed off.
Yeah. It's like, it's so bizarre to me. And when I was in California, it's like, I don't mind the traffic. I ain't in a hurry. You know, I'm just like, what? Like, I miss that about California because I'm on the East Coast and so I don't drive as much, but because I ride the train a lot. But like, like when I live in California, I love driving. I just like driving, listening to tunes, singing songs, having good conversation with people. Like, I was just like, why is everybody else on the street like so angry? Like, you know, like, and so I think sometimes we need to check ourselves on why we get so angry about like little tiny things, you know? Oh my gosh, that person cut you off. Well, guess what? At least you didn't die. Yeah. You know, like, what, you know, like, chill, you know, like, it's okay. Like, you don't have to be angry for the next 3 days because someone cut you off once.
Totally.
You know, so I feel like there's a self-awareness that has to happen. And I do this especially a lot, like when it comes to relationships, a lot, like when I'm feeling angry at my kids, especially, like sometimes I'll be like, why am I so angry at that thing? Every once in a while, it's because it's the day before my period. Ooh. That's my angry day. I track my cycles. And so angry day, I just tell people, do not come near me. Like, because it's just like a day, and I know it, and I'm so self-aware.
That's
like,
self-awareness.
Because I'll know, like, if I start feeling angry, I have an app on my phone, and I look at it, I'm like,
Knew it. Day
like,
before.
Because it's like almost like this, I don't know, my hormones, I guess, just have some weird freak out that day. And that's the day where I'm just like, I tell the nanny, hey, nanny, take the kids outside. Get them away from me. I just want to be chill. I'm going to work on my computer and just relax because I know the rage will come out.
Yeah.
You know? And it's self-awareness. And it takes work. But I guess because I've been doing it for so long, now it's like just easy for me, you know. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, even if it's in, like, there was one time I was on the phone with my boyfriend, and after the phone call, I felt really weepy. And the conversation was about, like, because he was working, like, really late. He was working until about midnight, but then he had work again at, like, 8 in the morning. And I was like, oh, are you gonna come out and see me tonight? And he was just like, and stay over. And he's like, oh, no, like, you know, it's not really going to be worth my time to come over there because I have to wake up, you know, early, right? He didn't say anything wrong, you know, or whatever. However, after the call, I felt so weepy and felt upset. And I was like, why am I feeling upset? Like, what was in that conversation that was causing that? And part of the reason that was because he said it wasn't worth the time. Mm. And so that made it feel like I wasn't worth his time. Like that I wasn't worth it. Wow. And I called him and I told him the next day. And I said, this is nothing against you. This is a thing on me. I just wanted to let you know, when you said those specific words, it triggered something in me to feel very upset. And it wasn't because of you. You weren't saying anything wrong. You know, you were just saying, oh, yeah, that's definitely not worth my time. I'd have to just basically go to sleep and then wake up. Like, why am I going to go over there? I could just sleep at my apartment that's like 5 minutes from here, you know, rather than going a half an hour to go see you, right? So, you know, I let him know. And he said, you know, I really appreciate that you let me know. He's like, I'll make sure, you know, I'm mindful to not really say those words, you know. And I told him, I said, yeah, that's great. And I'll make sure I'm working, you know, through this because, you know, I know, like, in, you know, past relationships and stuff, if, you know, it's like, time is a really important thing for me. Like, when you do the love languages test, which everybody here listening should do,
go do it.
The five love languages test, it really helps you in relationships. One of mine is like, I need the person that's going to spend time with me. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even matter if if we're just sitting and watching TV, like, it don't even matter. Like I just want to be near the human being. Like, that's like what I need in the relationship. Just, I don't care. Just sit next to me. That's all I need. Like, I have best friends who've been my friends for like 14 years. We don't even need to necessarily, like, do something specific when we come hang out.
We just be together.
Looking at magazines or reading a book, or just one's on the computer and one's on their phone. It don't care, as long as you're in my presence. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, that's like what I need, right? Yeah. And so I know that in some relationships, I felt like maybe the other person wasn't wanting to spend as much time with me. And that really kind of hurt my confidence in the relationship and things like that. And so I'm very, very self-aware when it comes to relationships. I have to be, because I feel like, you know, going through divorce and things, now all my next, especially romantic relationships, I want to make sure I'm doing it well and I'm communicating well. You know, my one boyfriend, he said that he couldn't believe how well I am at communicating.
Oh, you're so good.
He's like, you tell me exactly what you want, what you expect, the things you want and do want. Like, he's like, who the hell does this? You know, he's like, I'm 44 years old and you were the only woman I've ever dated, or even like, even before when we were just friends, he's like, the only woman that has ever communicated in this way to me. And he's like, and I'm so grateful for it because you're clear.
Yeah.
And it takes a little bit to get clear. I mean, I, you know, did hire a relationship coach and a sex coach and things like that, because I had to get really clear what I wanted about relationships, because, you know, I was in one relationship for 11 years, mm-hmm. you know? So it was like, okay, now what, you know? Yeah. And so once I got clear, and it has shifted, things have shifted. But once I got clear, anybody I date, I've been able to say, this is what I want, this is my expectations. Even, you know, my boyfriend, you know, currently, like, I literally told him, I said, I do not allow men to raise their voices at me. It terrifies me. It scares me. And the second I feel unsafe, I won't be able to have good sex. I won't be able to have good communication with you. I will shut down. I know how I am. I was raised in a very abusive home, and that terrifies me. If that happens, I will literally break up with you that moment.
Wow. That clarity is so huge. And also even speaking out what your needs are, what your expectations are and things, and that's healthy boundary setting. I love... Camera, I can talk to you forever. I'm like, why? I'm looking at the time. I'm like, how are we already at the hour mark? No. But I just want to recap a couple things that you said of like some of the keys to really move you towards the success or the freedom. One, stop complaining. I think that's just, and that's not even anything in business. It's just in life. If you want to live a happy life, see if you can just take the complaining out. And I know gratitude is so huge. Instead, what can you be grateful for? Two, altering your beliefs, what you said, like really doing the work of diving in, whether it's, you know, and journaling is so powerful, a place to put all your thoughts out. And to, sometimes when you're spinning in it and you stop and you write it in a journal, like it actually...
It stops the spinning.
It stops the spinning, yeah. And then what you said, the second part, which is so powerful, you can look at it and actually challenge each crappy thought and go, is this really true? And most of the time it's not. So let it go. And then three, I mean, I would just even throw this in because it kind of morphed into it, but I think it's still powerful to move you towards whether it's your vision that you want, whether the vision's in relationship or in business or in anything else in your life, is to get super clear of what you want, hire the people, the coaches. That's one thing, again, that I, one of the many things I love about Kimra Luna, there's so many, but you are constantly a student. You are constantly wanting to see how you can improve. You're constantly hiring coaches and mentors and teachers in areas where you want to grow. I mean, just in the time we were talking offline before, you're like, oh, and then I'm doing this training and that training, you know, whether on diversity training and all this stuff, because you care about how you show up for yourself and for others. So, so powerful. Get the support, guys, that you need. Reach out, educate yourself, elevate yourself. And that's going to continue to help you blast past the things that are holding you back. All right. So last three questions to close this out.
Right, okay. Hopefully I won't go so long on them.
Okay.
It's a long interview.
I know. It's
good though. It's juicy stuff.
It's so good. First is, what's something unique about you that most people don't know?
Well, I'm kind of like an open book. So most people pretty much know most things about me. But if they've never heard about me before or anything, I mean, definitely I'm pretty nerdy. I have like a huge Doctor Who tattoo on my back. And it's funny, if I meet a person that like knows what it is, I'm like, oh my gosh, like you're like my best friend. Because like not a lot of people like know what my like big tattoo is, like a giant tattoo. You know, I really love Harry Potter. Like I'm really into, I'm not insanely nerdy. It's not like I like sit and watch like superhero movies all day or something like that. But I have specific things that I'm nerdy about. And when I'm a nerd about it, I'm like hardcore.
All in.
Walking Dead, hardcore Walking Dead. Like, and Fear the Walking Dead, which is like the new one. You know, when I'm like into something, I'm like
all in.
All in. 100% in. So much to the point I get tattoos.
That is all in for sure. All right, Kimra the nerd. I love it. When you're in a really dark place, what's your go-to to get out?
Sometimes smoking weed first. Sometimes that's the first thing. I'm just like,
chill.
Need a chill for a minute. Like, let me find a friend who wants to chill with me. And then the next thing is definitely calling a close friend or someone to talk it out. And one thing I like to be very mindful of when I do talk to a friend, I will say up front, do you have the capacity to be my emotional support for like the next like 10 minutes?
That's great.
Because sometimes they're going through a bunch of their own ish that I don't even know what's going on with them. Because a lot of my friends are online or we don't see each other every single day. I don't go into a place of work where I have like all my work friends or whatever, you know? And so I always make sure they have the capacity, because if I'm going to drop something on them, like they need to know. Like, and I have had friends that say, you know what? Like, no, I'm having a really rough day too. I'm like, okay, great. I will find somebody else to call. Thank you so much for taking the time.
You're so brilliant. You know? That's so genius to ask so that someone can actually hold space for you instead of just dumping on them.
Well,
if they
because
can.
I accidentally did that. I actually like lost a friend because I did that, because they were going through something and I wasn't listening to them. And I got so hurt because I lost this friend. She was my friend for like 4 years. And I was like so devastated. But she was just like, you know, like, I don't feel like I can be that friend to you anymore because I feel like you're dumping things on me. And so I learned that lesson.
Yep.
And I think it's really important for people to have, you know, that group of friends, that sisterhood or whatever you want to call it. It's so important to have those people and have multiple, not just one person, like multiple, because sometimes one is going through something. One may be going through a divorce or their grandpa died or their dog died or someone got diagnosed with cancer or something's happening in people's lives. And you don't want to call them up and just dump everything on them. I always ask, hey, do you have the capacity? Do you have the time to take this on just for a few minutes? Maybe give me a little bit of advice. Maybe let me cry for a few minutes and give me a hug or whatever, you know? Like, do you have that capacity? If you don't, that's okay. I am okay with finding somebody else. And it has worked very brilliantly. And I think my friends respect me a lot more for that now because I ask first rather than just be like, oh my God, this horrible thing's happened to me. And I, you know, just start throwing all my trauma on top of them.
That's so good. And also, I love that because I know, I mean, I'm very grateful that I have kind of a community of women that I can go to, but I create in my own head, well, oh God, I don't want to dump. But when you ask for permission, then they can say no.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, okay, good. Yeah. And now I don't feel like I'm imposing because that's something I make up in my head. Like I don't sometimes want to be like, oh, I don't want to say this thing again. Or if you're really in something deep that you kind of have to repeat it a little bit because you're processing,
then
I don't, you know, I'll take that on myself. So it's good. I love that. And that'll,
And trust me, your friends will like it. They'll be like, I'm so happy you said that. Actually, no, today I don't have the time. I had to take my kid to I had to take my dog to the vet because they got hit by a car. And you're like, oh, well, yeah, you take care of you. You know, I will find someone else to help take care of me.
Yeah.
You know, and even if that's just to go to the therapist or whatever, like find someone to help take care of you.
Yeah. So good. All right. Knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your 10-year-old self?
My 10-year-old self, go find somebody to adopt you and get out of your household. And I actually did try to find people to adopt me. But I guess to my 10-year-old self, it would probably be the don't complain thing. That would probably be something that would have really, really shifted my life. If at that point I would have looked for the positive things because I think it would have brought me towards more positive people. I think it would have brought me towards more positive situations. So I'm thinking that would have been what I would have said to myself. Like, hey, Kimra, if you just like stop complaining so much and look for some positive things, your life's gonna be better.
Mm.
My 10-year-old self would have liked that.
Mm-hmm. And she probably would have nerded out on it and
tattooed. Going to the library and got a tattoo to my head. You know?
Yeah, you're like, why do you have a tattoo on your forehead that says don't complain?
and it's backwards, so I can see it in the mirror.
I love it. Kimra, thank you so much for sharing your heart, your wisdom, everything on this show. I adore you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me and being here in my home.
Yes. How incredible is Kimra's rise from her past to where she is now? I mean, she is such a testament that your past does not define your future, and the mega importance of doing the inner work to heal so that you can create freedom within yourself and in your life. And she is such an example of what is possible when you do invest the time and the energy to elevate within. So as you guys heard in today's episode, Kimra mentioned that one of the biggest keys for her to heal and rise up was forgiveness. And I know that forgiveness is so important. It is truly the gateway to freedom. And so if you want support with forgiveness, especially for yourself, and I know that this is so hard, that's a hard one for a lot of people. Well, if you want that support, then make sure you check out my free self-love gift that I've got for you. It's a free self-love kickstart that'll give you some powerful practices to get you on your journey to owning your worth, to releasing your past, and to opening up to your own love to radically transform your life. And so you can download that free gift that I created just for you at stephaniekwong.com/self-love-kickstart. All right, and if you want more goodness from Ms. Kimra, go check out my Instagram @IamStephanieKwong, where I've got a mini video of her giving her best tip of what to do to shift out of a challenging time. And if you got value from this episode and you want more, I would love, love, love for you to subscribe to the podcast. And if it feels right, I would be so deeply grateful if you'd leave me a 5-star review on iTunes, because that means that we can support even more people to rise higher together. Also, if there's someone that you know who could benefit from this episode, please share it out with them. And finally, for everything that we mentioned in today's episode and for links to connect with Kimra, you can check it out in the show notes, and that's over at stephaniekwong.com/EP20. And you can check out all my other podcast episodes there too. All right, until next time, I'm sending you so much love.